The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
If you're a dog owner, you'll be more than familiar with the pains of training them. My next guest is here to answer all of your dog behaviour questions. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Nancy Creedon, clinical animal behaviourist. Nancy, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm coming to you from home with two dogs in it. So I think at some point I might need to ask you a few very deeply personal questions about my two.
Go for it.
I was fascinated by your path into this. You were teaching your own dog tricks in the family home when you were only 6 years of age.
I was, and I love that dog. I'm looking at a picture of her right now up on my cork board. She was the best dog in the world. And it was that bond, that relationship that I only had with her. You know, no one else in the family got me like this dog got me. So I'm a big, big supporter of kids and dogs having that strong relationship. People fear about the relationship between kids and dogs. And it's so invaluable. I wouldn't be who I was if it wasn't for that dog. And I wouldn't be talking to you today if it wasn't for that dog.
<That's> amazing. I'm amazed that you were able to get things out of that dog, get the dog to do things that nobody else was able to.
I guess it was more the bond. I mean, in hindsight now, when I look back at some of the pictures and stuff and the things that I put her through and the feather boas and the cuddles inside in cardboard boxes, like, she was a very tolerant dog. But the thing is, when you have a dog, they're man-made. They're a species that wants to please you. And as long as you're kind and gentle and respectful to that animal will go to the end of the earth for you because they adore you. They're made to love us. They're the biggest ego boost, I think, out there.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think also in terms of that unfailing love that they give you and the smiling face that, a lot of people could learn from just having a smiling face, you know, on call like that. It's a wonderful
100%.
Thing. And then you did zoology in UCD. You did animal grooming and pet psychology. This was what you wanted to be from a very early age, wasn't it?
Well, I will say I'm stubborn. So I'm very, very stubborn. So if I say I'm going to do something, I will do it. And I guess as a kid, because I loved dogs and wanted to be around dogs, I knew whatever journey my path took, it would be with dogs. Obviously, as a kid, that kind of by default is, oh, I'm going to be a vet. And I remember one time I was driving from Dublin down to Cork and I was about 9 or 10 years old. And I remember we drove past. We used to get excited to see the big field of deer. I don't know if people remember, but on the Dublin Cork Road, you'd have acres of deer. And I would get excited to go and see the deer. And then when I was about 9 or 10, I realized it was Galty Deer Care. And I was like, oh, wait a second. These are food. They're not entertainment for passers-by. And at that age, I decided, well, look, if I'm going to be a vet, I have to be a vegetarian too. So I was very committed to my career from 10 years of age.
Oh, very, very impressive. Right. I have a few questions. See how you get. One listener says, I have a dog and a cat and they don't get on at all. What can I do?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to go on to Channel 5, I have a series called Cats and Dogs at War that I did during COVID over on Channel 5. But basically, the cats and dogs thing is you have to understand these are two very different species. And a lot of the time what people do is they'll kind of assume it'll be okay. So what we like to do is firstly for the cat, you need to make sure the cat has loads of escape routes, loads of height, loads of areas in common spaces that it can be safely where the dog can't get to it. And then even before the greetings or if the greetings have gone bad, keep them separate and keep doing scent swapping. So what you're going to do is you're going to swap the cat's blanket with the dog's blanket with the cat's blanket, and you're going to pair that scent with enjoyable experiences. So favorite treats, cuddles, playing games, things like that. So every time the cat can smell the dog or the dog can smell the cat, good things are happening. When the fun and games is over, take that scent away. And what you want to do is make sure that obviously the cat is usually going to be the victim in the situation, but young puppies and brave cats can sometimes go wrong for the dog too. So just making sure that you're using physical barriers until the animals are coexisting calmly. Never introduce two animals of any species when they're hyper or wound up or nervous, because their brain isn't going to be working properly. They're not going to be thinking. They can't learn. They're not going to respond logically, and their threat interpretation is going to be worse. So always make sure that you're introducing calm animals. If they're not calm, there's no rush.
Okay, my God. I wish I'd known that 10 months ago. Anyway, few of the things that come up often for you. One are dogs in court, and it's where you stand legally if your dog bites or injures somebody.
And that's one that breaks my heart, because quite often people believe that if a dog bites, it needs to be put to sleep. And it's far from black and white. Legally, no. Legally, for the dog to be put to sleep, you can take that all the way to court. I've been expert witness a number of times in court, and each time, once I interpret what happened with the dog and analyse the probability of that threat to happen again, in the cases that I believe that dog isn't going to be an ongoing threat to the public, when I recommend to the judge that, look, this dog is safe, management will be in place, I've assessed the owners, they know what they're doing, 100% of the time the judges rule in my favour. So we need to stop fearing that if my dog snapped at the neighbour who was pulling at my dog's tail, that is a dead dog. That is not a dead dog. A bite, in many, many situations, is communication. And if you guys push me too far, you missed my earlier signal saying, give me a break, give me space. If you don't give me space, I'm going to freak out. Here comes the freak out. Oh, there's a freak out. Now it's a bad dog. No, 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 no. We screwed up. We need to analyse it, get a professional, of course, get yourself a clinical animal behaviourist to come in and analyse what happened. But this whole thing of dogs biting, having to be put to sleep, is legally, no, they're not. They're property, and the judge can then rule for the dog to be destroyed if they believe it's necessary. But it's not a black and white, and it's not an open close.
Okay, because a lot of people do see that as a very straightforward thing, like if a dog does that. And anytime I've seen it, it's when the dog has been pestered and annoyed, and and unreasonable behaviour is what I see from adults or people around the dog when something like that happens.
So many times. And sometimes it can be that there's something up with the dog. Sometimes it can be medical. Sometimes some dogs do enjoy biting. And they're the ones that really are the ones that we do need to be more cautious about. The dogs that enjoy that activity of hold me back, that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But usually in 95% of the time, it's a case of, okay, miscommunication, misunderstanding. And quite often the dog did pretty good to put up with as much as it did put up with.
Right. Very good. Dogs and babies, a huge one, obviously. If you have a dog in the house and you're going to be bringing a newborn home, that's going to scare people. A lot of people are thinking, you know, maybe somebody else could take the dog. What do you do there?
What you do there is you pop on to nancycreedon.ie. I've got a free online course for people. It's called Is Your Dog Expecting Your Baby? But the basics are a good 3 to 4 months before the baby's due, you're getting that dog familiar with the smell, the sight and the sound of what this newborn baby is going to be. Because as much as I'm always like, lads, give the dog a break, we often underestimate how much a newborn baby is like a prey animal to a dog rather than, oh, there's a human being in jeans and trainers, you know?
Yeah.
They smell like prey, they sound like prey, they look like prey, they're the size of prey. When we hear of dogs biting and attacking newborn babies, as absolutely the most horrendous thing that it is that can occur with dogs and people. Again, that's just a dog doing exactly what a dog feels like doing. It's not an abnormal dog. It's not a Cujo dog. It's not a dog out to eat people. It's a dog that, ooh, there's a squeaky toy. What do I normally do with my squeaky toys? I grab it, I bite it, and I take it into my bed. So we need to take that one super duper duper seriously. If you have any concerns about your dog around children in general, again, clinical animal behaviors, get an expert in. Let them tell you what's going on with your dog, because I promise you, every dog owner out there, unless you're professionally trained, you don't actually fully understand your dog.
Sure.
As much as I don't want to judge you and your dog. There's a lot to learn. I've spent the last 20 years studying and I'm still studying. There's so much to learn. But yeah, babies and dogs scares the bejesus out of me. Just please make sure you're confident that your dog is comfortable around kids. Get the fake baby. Get the crying sounds on YouTube. Walk around with this pram. Get them used to it. And then when the nappies do start to come in the hospital, you can bring home the nappies. Or there is no rush in introducing the dog and the baby. You can take 2 weeks.
Sure.
You know, just make sure the house is kind of separate. Wait till everybody feels ready. Wait till you're kind of feeling like you know what you're doing, because it is a bit of a daunting time in anyone's life. Don't rush it. Take it slowly. Get professional help if you need to, and prep your dog for the smells, the sights and the sounds of a baby.
And don't panic, I think, as well, in that as well. You'll get there. Now that a listener wants to know, my dog likes to play bite me when we're wrestling. It's not hard or vicious, but how do I stop it?
Oh, okay. This is a really good one and a really easy one, because this is information that every dog owner can take and anyone with a child under 3 can take. When you're giving your dog feedback, if you want them to learn yes to something or no to something, that feedback has to be the instant the behavior begins. So if you're playing with your dog and you're wrestling about and it's all fun and games, what I would be doing in that moment pre-teeth on skin is I think, you're a good boy. You're such a good boy. Praise, praise. This behavior is wanted. The instant the teeth touch human skin, I'm disappointed. you read my diary. You've really let me down. I'm going to walk away for 3 seconds. I can't believe you did that to me. And you're fully gutted. Dogs are the only non-primate species that can read facial expressions. So you really give them that really hurt and disappointed facial expression. Low tones were not exciting the dog. So the instant they begin the biting behavior, mummy or daddy got disappointed. Give them a couple of seconds and then you can go back to play again, praising again. Again, instant teeth touch skin, I'm disappointed. If you can give them that double feedback, everything was good, good, good pre-biting. The instant the biting begin, oh no, we're not happy. The instant the biting stopped, oh, you're a good boy again. The dogs get it like that. They get it so quick if they've double feedback and if your timing is spot on. So I've no problem with quote unquote punishment. For me, punishment is, bear, I'm disappointed in you.
Sure.
No, bear, I'm not happy. Down off the couch. But I'm not using pain. I'm not using fear. I'm not using intimidation. I'm using my relationship. And that behavior kind of jeopardized our relationship a tiny bit for a second there, bear. And bear's like, oh, Jesus, I love you. I love when you're happy with me. What would you like me to do instead? And then I reinforce and praise the behavior I want. It's textbook. We do very little training with our dog in this house, but we communicate with him clearly. And he gets it and he wants to please us.
Right, you do very little training. Oh, I'm very intrigued.
No training. We
really?
Got lucky. We rescued Bear from the CSPCA down in Cork. He was found dumped tied to a tree. Spent the night in the Bridewell prison in Cork, and then we adopted him. And he's just the best dog in the world. I know everybody says that, but he really is because I know the difference. He's so good. And yeah, no, we he's busy. He's stimulated. He engages with the whole family. But training, no, we don't really need to do training with him. We just give him feedback.
Okay, good. I'm going to be quoting that later on, just so you know. Right. Breeds and bands and dangerous dogs and stuff like that. The kind of, I find it when I see one or two where I'm suspicious, I get very nervous, put my dogs, if they aren't on leads, back on leads and that kind of stuff. Where do we stand? Kind of myths versus the facts.
The controversial one. You want to drop in the big controversial one. Okay. Let me give you my opinion, okay? And it's based on a lot of science and a lot of time around dogs. Every breed group has a different brain. When we're looking at the anatomy of dogs' brains, when we say there's a breed group that they're driven to follow things on sight, there's a breed group driven to follow things on scent, there is a breed group originally bred for fighting. When we look at breeds that are originally bred for fighting, and that can include your terriers, because again, they're going to fight the rat or fight whatever they're going to be taking on, their brains are statistically different. They have a different region for stress response, excitement, and pain. So we cannot say all dogs are the same. We can't. We cannot say your collie is going to act like your beagle, because 99.9% of the time it won't. When we look at what dogs are originally bred for, what we have is we have a risk that when dogs become what I call hindbrain, but what that actually means is their body enters the sympathetic nervous system dominant state, which in layman's term is your fight or flight. When the body gets into that sympathetic nervous system state, instinctual behaviors are more likely to emerge.
Sure.
So if you've got a scent hound, that could be following scent. If you've got a collie, that could be herding something. When you've got dogs that are bred to fight, they enjoy the behavior of grabbing and playing. And that's play for them. So as long as you've got a dog that enjoys that tenacity, that enjoys that bite, shake, grab, and you're giving them appropriate, safe outlets for it, and you're managing their excitement, you're managing how wound up that dog is, you're fine. But we all need to take into consideration that when our dogs become hyper, when our dogs become fearful, when the body, when the adrenaline starts flowing, basically, that's when every dog becomes a little bit more dangerous. That's when more instinctual behaviors will come out. Every single breed of dog is bred and designed to carry out predatory behaviors, eye, stalk, chase, grab bite, kill bite, dissect bite. Some are finely tuned to do different elements better. But when it comes to dogs that are bred for fighting, I do strongly believe that there's an extra element of safety that you need to implement, because when your dog becomes hyper, it is potentially more likely to do more damage than others. And when I do horrendously look at fatal dog attacks, what I'm looking at is dogs playing and they're having fun and they're enjoying. They're not thinking this is a human. This is a toy. It's a rope toy.
God.
I'm doing what my gut is telling me to do.
Yeah.
So I am, yes, very conscious that every dog poses a risk. I've got a big, strong Rottweiler German Shepherd. I've got young kids. I'm consciously watching his arousal. As soon as Bear is excited or as soon as the kids are excited, I separate.
Okay.
And that's it.
Very good. I have some lovely questions coming in from listeners, and this one is, it's actually one that I can identify with because this happens in our house too. My 4-year-old schnauzer hates being left at home alone. He sits staring out the window waiting for us to come home, making this low whine. It's heartbreaking. What can we do? We leave the TV on, radio on, treats and food. Nothing helps. He doesn't move from the window.
Okay, so I have the golden secret for this one, because it is heartbreaking and you do feel so guilty. What I've been doing recently, and it's working brilliantly with dogs, is jump onto Amazon. I think it's around 15, 20 quid, and get a stuffable dummy. So it's basically, it looks like a human. You stuff it with your worn clothes. So take it out of the laundry basket, socks, smelly clothes, stick that into the stuffed mannequin, dress it in your clothes, put your shoes in it, put your hat in it, and the dogs, almost 100% of the dogs will go and kind of sit beside the fake mum. You need to sneak out of the house to make sure that when you are leaving that the dog is distracted in one room. You might go out a back door or just have someone else distract the dog. But they're working really, really well. It's the scent and it's that comfort of having someone present. So they can add that to their training program, and I promise that should really be the final touch that helps that dog feel safe at home.
My God, that I never knew such a thing existed. A stuffable dummy version of me, which I'll be able to create and fool my two dogs.
I'm work one day if you're lucky.
I just wanted to ask this one very quickly too, because it also ties in with the world I'm into. My 5-month-old Cavachon, when we're walking, constantly stares at other dogs when we're out on a walk. He cries to be brought over to them and just wants to play. What can I do?
Okay, and this is something that everybody can do and possibly should do. If your dog has an emotional response, a heightened emotional response to any stimulus, but let's just say we're talking about dogs. Yes, we want your dog to like dogs, but we don't want your dog to become obsessed, to become fixated. And what often happens is dogs who really, really, really want to go and play with other dogs end up becoming reactive because the frustration they feel when they don't get to satisfy that need. So there's a dog, I want to go say hi. I never got to say hi. Now I'm cross now. Hey, you, dog, you make me cross. A lot of reactivity is frustration because the dog doesn't get to play. So my golden rule with dogs when they're in any way heightened emotional state around something is watch and learn from a distance. So you bring a book, you go find a quiet bench that's 50 feet away from the busy path, you bring a licky mat for your dog or a stuffed Kong or something that will promote chewing, which is a calming, chewing releases dopamine, which calms dogs down. So you sit at the park bench, a good 50 feet from the passing dog, let him watch the other dogs, but they're so far away that he's not overstimulated, so he's not trying to get to them. He's pairing the presence of other dogs with me licking and chewing and feeling good and feeling calm. Oh, dogs aren't that great anymore. It's kind of like when Boyzone kind of go out of the way and Breastlife step in. So it's a case of giving them something that's more interesting because the dogs over there are kind of not interesting. Now, by default, I'm not bothered about dogs. I've got my Kong.
Right. My God. Bribery, really, it sounds. Would letting him play with the dogs not be an option as well?
I would let him play with the other dogs if he's calm. So my golden rule with playing is if the dogs don't stop and interrupt their play every 30 seconds to take a mini pause, you interrupt it. So let your dog play 30 seconds, 45 seconds, call them, piece of chicken, off you go again. And what that will do is it will keep that adrenaline lower. Anything with heightened adrenaline and play can lead to problems and will lead to inappropriate behaviours that they don't mean to do when they're kind of that bit calmer. So my big thing is just calmness. And that's full on calmness, but just, you don't want to be saying to the dogs, this is going to end in tears, lads.
Okay. Nancy, it's fascinating stuff. I could ask you questions all day. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.